Welcome aboard. This is Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
And I'm Catherine.
And this is the podcast where we take two things that don't belong in the same genre but belong in the same category. Using a special set of criteria designed specifically for this episode, we just tell you which one's best. Welcome aboard, Catherine. This is your first podcast with me. I'm so excited you're here.
I'm excited too. A little nervous, but let's do it.
Don't worry, no one listens to this. I don't even think Dave's going to listen to it. He's going to tell you he did and you did bad, but he did not listen to it. Guaranteed.
All right, great.
There's like hard facts and like stats that the internet sends me, and it is, we're fine. It's like talking into an empty cup and no one's on the other side of the string. Each episode of the podcast, me and somebody else consume new media to them. So I suggested that we could listen to a podcast, we could listen to a music album, or we could watch a movie. And you said that you probably don't have time to watch two movies, which makes sense. You don't want to listen to whole podcasts, like, and then you're not too into the hip-hop, the hip music scene. So you said...
I know literally nothing about music.
Which is why that's... You listen to two new things. But, so we decided that of all those three, that you could sacrifice 3 hours of your week, which is the most reasonable amount. And so you're like, I want to do a movie, but I don't want to just watch a movie, because you want it to be, like, I guess, self-edifying. You wanted to get something out of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the movies I suggested, you're like, those don't sound educational. Just fair. Because I've watched a lot of the good movies, and now I'm just trying to get through the trash movies and find a reason to do it. So you said you wanted to watch documentaries. What made you suggest that? Or why do you think a documentary is a worthwhile use of your time?
Well, I do really like podcasts. And so I was interested in that part of mm-hmm. the like learning aspect of media.
Right.
But I don't know. I think TV has been speaking to me much more lately. And
that's fair.
And so I was like, oh, TV for learning, documentaries. That sounds interesting.
I think there's a lot of like... The budget has sort of swung. I guess, like, no, that's not true. Because, like, movies still get just incredibly high budgets. Like, like Avengers and Disney movies aside, because that's not fair to compare,
mm-hmm.
like, a multi-billion dollar franchise that churns out something that's, like, their flop still makes $100 million, like, which is insane.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, did you hear that, like, the Lion King's, like, the live-action one, like, set some box office records, and everyone I know who's commented on it critically said it was bad.
Oh, really?
But
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it. I don't want to see it, but I heard that it's still, like, just wildly. Everything they do turns to gold, even if it's bad.
Well, my sister-in-law was saying that they now have to make movies for the global market. And
Disney.
So Disney, and that's why there are all these superhero movies, because... things like rom-coms don't land in cultures with arranged marriages, and you know, or things like that. And
that
so, but everyone loves superhero movies, so that's why there's this glut of superhero movies and action movies.
Okay.
And, like, there will probably never be another good rom-com in the movie theaters.
A lot of people would argue that there hasn't been a lot of good rom-coms before this. We could do that for another episode.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, going back to TV, like, they're putting more money into, like, producing good TV, whether it's, you know, informational or entertainment, I think.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you have all these new, you know, Netflix, Hulu, Amazon Prime that
mm-hmm.
are, you know, taking TV more seriously. And I think, you know, the way we consume media is changing. We used to go to a lot more movies, and now people are much more into binging TV shows.
Yeah.
Which are just sort of, like, really long movies.
Right. If it's done right.
If it's, yeah.
Yeah. And so we... had, I guess that led us the opportunity, we could have watched a docu-series,
mm-hmm.
but that's, again, like...
hours.
Minimum 10
yeah.
hours. Like, I was looking at other documentaries, and they recommended one that I had watched that was a series, and I'm like, it was 6 hours, but it could have been a movie,
uh-huh.
but they stretched it out, and it worked. Although, like, me watching it, does that give Netflix money? Like, watching the whole... Is it... I don't know.
I don't know how that. Yeah, I don't know how their model.
I know they're
anymore.
Making. I don't know if they're making money, but I'm watching all their stuff.
Yeah.
So.
Well, I mean, you just pay the membership fee, right?
Well, my sister does.
Oh.
Yeah. It's teamwork.
All right. Valid.
Yeah. But so documentaries I think I want to say in the past couple of years, it seems like there's been not a renaissance, but more like I've heard people watching more and saying more complimentary things about documentaries.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before now, on everybody knew about the Thin Blue Line, which sort of took a look at like a criminal case that was mishandled. That was sort of, I think that was everyone's like hallmark for a documentary. And then that we had like Super Size Me, and we had the Michael Moore movies.
I forgot about those.
And those are kind of, those were like sort of about the director more than the media.
Yeah.
And I think that sort of like reinvigorated some stuff. And
mm-hmm.
then we were talking earlier before we started podcasting about like Serial and Making a Murderer and all of true crime exploded.
Yeah, everyone's obsessed with true crime right now.
And that's sort of its own, like, it's not a documentary. Like,
uh-huh.
it's one person trying to find the truth, and it's usually the host is the main character, too.
Yeah.
But, like, I think a good documentary, like, you don't know who made it, usually. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, like, so they don't put in their bias, or they,
right.
you know, it could be anyone back there.
Yeah.
They're just really telling the story of the subject.
Right. And I think that's, like, it's supposed to be providing something that people don't already know about, because otherwise it would just be a movie about that thing. And,
yeah.
There's something like, there's a truth that needs to be uncovered. I don't know. There's a lot of questions up there, and I haven't figured out exactly what a good documentary, why everyone's fascinated by documentaries, but...
Well, I think, like you said, in the past, it was just things like Super Size Me and Michael Moore, and they were kind of really a high production value documentaries, and again, they had to go out through the movie theaters, but now with the Netflix and the Hulus and everything, they sort of have to come up with more content.
That's fair.
And I think it's a lot cheaper to make a documentary than it is to, you know, make a movie, so...
There's a lot of, like, common use laws that allow you to use not just archival footage, but, like, footage of, like, things that are copyrighted. Like, you're allowed to use them if you're doing, like, commentary, criticism, or, like, educational purposes. So, it's a little bit easier for... So, that's why you'll, like, watch a YouTube channel, and they'll be, just a movie critic, and he's doing a video essay, and he has, like, clips from a movie, and it's not, like, shut down immediately. So...
Oh, I never considered that.
This is... Yeah, oh, man. I gotta look up a lot of stuff about it. No, that's not true. Just, I never want to go to jail. So, there's all these things that, like, common use, so... That's more work for the editor, but it's not necessarily harder to get your hands on media to put in your
documentary. And you don't have to pay actors, and you don't have to create sets and things like that. And so,
but I think
you can still tell really interesting stories.
Yeah, and I think that both of these documentaries did a good job of like talking to people who were a little bit. It seemed like they were more important than, like, I assumed that they were going to pull for the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm like, oh, wow. But I think if you're... They probably sold it in a good way where they're like, hey, I'm trying to tell this story. I think you have something important to say.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know.
Have we said what the names of the movies are yet?
We can now.
I was like, I think we might be confusing
so
our
we
listeners.
We have Won't You Be My Neighbor, which was a 2018 American documentary film, which talked about the life and life work of Fred Rogers, the host and creator of Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. And then we also watched, it's called The Perfect Bid, The Contestant Who Knew Too Much, which was the American documentary that came out in 2017, which told the story of Theodore Slauson, who was... So I'm just going to read the Wikipedia thing because it's way easier. He's a super fan of The Price is Right. He spends his early life memorizing and documenting the prize amounts on The Price is Right. When he turns 18, Slauson starts traveling to the show to become a contestant. Even when he is not picked to be a contestant, Slauson yells out the prices and helps the contestants win money on the show. That's the synopsis of the movie.
Yeah, that's the whole thing.
That's what they say. And then, like, as a sort of, like, M. Night Shyamalan twist at the end, you find out that there's actually, like, this scandal. And when I say scandal, I mean, like, scandal to the people who watched it, because I had not heard of this.
Yeah.
And I guess, in one way, that's kind of interesting, that, like, you're learning stuff that you would, like, there's a documentary on something, a scandal that you never knew about. We were talking about the Fyre Festival. Like, I wanted to watch that documentary because I loosely knew what it was about. I had never heard of any scandal on The Price is Right.
Yeah.
Besides the whole, like, everyone hates Drew Carey thing. Which isn't a scandal. It's
oh,
just
everyone
like,
hates him? I didn't know that.
First couple years, everybody hated him. Like,
well,
right after Bob.
Was it that everyone hated him or everyone missed Bob?
He was bad at his job.
Oh, okay.
And
I never
that's what people said. People said he, like, he lacked any sort of personality on the show. And, like, also Bob had done it for over 30 years, so you just grow accustomed to one thing.
Yeah.
So you want to talk about the plot of Won't You Be My Neighbor a little bit?
Yeah, sure. So basically, they just spend most of the episode talking to Fred's friends and families and people associated with the show about how during the time that he came on television and even today, that children's television was really focused on moving fast and, you know, being really slapstick, and Fred really wanted to make a show that was a little bit slower and really met children where they were and helped them process their feelings and sort of navigate through a scary and treacherous world. And so he was really, I guess, revolutionary, although it didn't feel like that. It felt like a lot of the things on the show were just kind of happened. You know, they talk about why he used puppets, and it was the tape broke and they needed to fill time back in the 60s, and so he just put on a puppet and started talking. And then it stuck for 30 years,
yeah.
Which is just kind of funny. So I thought it was really cool in that they showed how this evolved and, you know, him taking on a new perspective on children's television.
Do you remember one of the examples they used of how the show, like, moved slower? Do you remember, like, the thing about the clock?
Yeah, like, they said, hey, kids, do you want to know how long a minute is? And they just started a timer and just sat there for 60 seconds.
Yeah.
And they finished, and that's how long a minute is, which I thought was really great. But he did a lot of other things, like, you know, when he put his shoes on,
right,
or switched shoes, like, that was really slow. They talked about him using silence to help in an interview. So if he was interviewing someone, they would give their answer and he would just sort of pause and look at them.
Right.
And then, you know, hopefully, or usually the interviewee would say, this is awkward, and start talking some more. So just using silence in a really interesting way.
I wrote down two of the, like, most famous guests that I remembered that, like, made an impact on me. There was Yo-Yo Ma, who is just talking about how Fred Rogers put his face, like, 3 inches away from his face. He's like, I'm so glad you're here. Do you want to talk about your instrument? And he's just like, that's, like, how kids talk to me.
Yeah.
And he's like, it was very disarming. And he, like, ended up giving a really good interview. And then you find out, like, when Fred calls him, because apparently he's, like, still friends with 90% of the people in his life.
Yeah.
He calls him when he's, like, about to, like, he has a, you know, terminal diagnosis. And Yo-Yo Ma plays him a song over the phone. I'm like, that makes so much sense in that relationship.
Yeah, I thought that was great, too. That did kind of strike me, like, would I ever have a conversation with a friend where I was like, let me play some, you know,
right,
like, I'm not a musician,
right,
but if I ever had, you know, oh, this thing really struck me, and
right,
I think it's, you know, would I do that, or, you
right
know, would I always just use words over the phone? I thought that was really interesting.
Yeah. And then the second guest is Coco the Gorilla.
Yeah.
Because you just see Mr. Rogers sitting next to this, like, half-ton murdering creature.
Yeah.
And I think he's trying to tie, or Coco tries to tie a shoe at one point.
Uh-huh.
And then she, like, holds him in her arms and then uses sign language to tell the, like, trainer, hey, I love his visit. This was great. I was like, what? Wow, you impressed a gorilla.
Yeah. It was really interesting, I thought, with the gorilla, because you did see a lot of human characteristics in the gorilla.
It seemed surreal and fake.
Yeah, it seemed like a man in a gorilla suit. It was really interesting.
No, but that was a real gorilla, and it could have, like, just punched his face off. And
yeah, the sheer size.
And
yeah.
It looked like he was older in it, too. Like, he was, well, I don't know. I don't remember when Coco was.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guessing, like, mid-90s, so. But anyway, you really see, like, both Bob Barker and Mr. Rogers age profoundly in some of these. Because you see them, like, right, like, in black and white, which I didn't even know how old, like, Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood was.
Yeah, I didn't realize that they put it out right when television started,
right.
Basically.
He saw too many people getting pied in the face, and he said, let me try my hand at this.
I liked his story of how he got into it, too. It's like, I was going to go to the seminary, and I watched television one time and said, maybe I should do this.
And then he still goes to the seminary, though, so he finds time. But apparently he wrote, composed, and performed almost all of the music, and then sings in multiple times in each episode,
and does all the voices,
right?
And, yeah,
it seems like a lot of work.
It does seem like a lot of work.
I want to point out that,
although if you're pausing, there's a lot of silence.
Yeah, if you're just like, let's throw that clock up there again.
Maybe it's not as much work as it sounds.
So you were talking about how what he was doing seemed, even today, seems kind of unusual, but back then it seemed, like, counterintuitive. And apparently they were originally going to call the movie The Radical Mr. Rogers, and then, unfortunately, it says, but after the election of Donald Trump, the term radical had a negative connotation, according to the director. And sort of on the other foot, in December 2018, former U.S. President Barack Obama listed the film as one of his favorite films of 2018. So, I mean, like,
I think that's actually how I came about the movie.
Yeah.
I think I saw it on his list and then said, oh, what is this thing? And then
watched it. It was only playing in, like, not art houses, but it wasn't playing in, like, mainstream theaters in St. Louis last summer. Like, it was Tivoli and Plaza Frontenac and that sort of stuff, High Point. So you had to do some legwork because apparently they didn't think this was, I don't know, all the people who would know anything about Mr. Rogers, like, can drive a car and have money to go see it. So I don't know why they market this differently.
Yeah.
But last things about this movie before we move on. The director, Morgan Neville, has a whole slew of other documentaries if you want to watch them.
Oh.
Primarily, he did music documentaries. So he did A Story About the Beach Boys, Muddy Waters, Johnny Cash, Iggy and the Stooges, Keith Richards. So I guess picking it, like, he did, like, the complete opposite of a rock star, which is this man who wears sweaters and, like, goes to the crayon factory. So
well, he's kind of a rock star for children, right? Like,
I guess so.
So
those kids were very excited to see him.
Yeah. Well, they said that they, like, didn't really understand their reach, and then they planned an event in Boston, and there was, like, a line, or, you know, around the block of families trying to see him.
And it was in the rain. I don't know if that was the same footage, but that was, like, just... Also, remember when he was in front of Congress, and he made that old man almost cry?
Oh, yeah.
By just, like, telling him the lyrics to a song and he's just like, well, you're gonna get your $22 million, but apparently every single other person had just pissed off this guy. Like, what were these people saying that were, I don't, like, public television, I guess, as a philosophy, just wasn't cutting it in Nixon's America.
Well, it's still always on the chopping block now.
Yeah, of course.
But I was surprised because I watched that footage and I was like, that's nice. But I didn't feel like, oh, I gotta, you know, I feel compelled. So it must have been something about the way he talks to you, Mr. Rogers, which is, you know, really effective for kids, but then also must have been very effective. He must have just learned to connect with this congressperson.
Which, and when they mentioned that Mr. Rogers did a show, like, later for adults, like, he took a break because he had recorded a couple hundred episodes, and each show he would like play a video, so it would reduce the amount of time it would take for production value or production reasons. And, like, he did a whole slew of, like, primetime stuff where he,
mm-hmm.
like, went into a prison and he talked to, like, a classical pianist. And, like, he said it didn't have the same effect on the primetime crowd. And what I could only assume is that, like, people didn't know how to... They didn't want to connect with their emotions, where kids, like, they're like, oh, I this, you know, I have the opportunity to, and adults are like, oh, this is scary.
Yeah,
like,
or adults are like, I've spent a lot of my life shoving them down and suppressing them,
right.
and I don't need you pulling them back up.
Right, I don't want to know that people in prison are sad. I would rather just not think about that.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I think that, like, it wasn't that it was unsuccessful, just that it didn't reach the same crowd as his... you know, children's programming.
Yeah, well, I think kids really appreciate when an adult connects with them.
Yeah.
And in a way that is, I don't know, much more rare or, like, cherished
mm-hmm.
than just, I guess, I don't know, I guess some adults, too, really need a strong connection like that, but I think it just feels a little differently when you have an adult taking a child seriously.
Paying attention to them.
And also when you're a kid, you are a big ball of emotions that,
yeah.
that you do not understand. So for someone to make sense of those
yeah.
things for you, I think is really helpful.
And inexplicable things just keep happening.
Yeah.
So speaking of inexplicable things, The Price is Right has this man who watches it. And you know about, like, everybody has their show.
Uh-huh.
Or you hear about, like, people watch Wheel of Fortune, like, religiously.
Yeah, or Jeopardy.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
And very rarely do you hear about anything coming out of those. Do you remember the name of the guy from Jeopardy who, like, won all the money and blew everybody's brains away? Like,
the recent one?
No. Not... See, I don't know that guy's name.
I don't know any of their names. I just knew the recent guy... The only thing I heard about him was he won a ton of money and
yeah.
then made a donation to...
Oh, that's nice.
Was it pancreatic cancer that Alex Trebek has?
Oh.
Which was very nice of him.
So there was Ken Jennings.
Okay.
Like, he made more money than any other contestant ever.
Did he still make more money than this recent person?
I don't think so.
Okay.
think, like, he was the first one to make that much money, and then he was the longest running guy.
Oh, okay.
And then there was a guy who, like, was breaking the system, and he would find all the daily doubles, and then, like...
Oh, yeah.
And then this guy, the latest guy, like, would start at the bottom and move up, which was... counterintuitive to how the game is supposed to be played, apparently. And so, like, I remember hearing about those guys, and I remember hearing about the guy who was on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire and won the $1 million the first time.
Oh, yeah.
But I had no idea that they're, like, I didn't even watch Price is Right that much, mostly because I was so bad at it. Like,
mm-hmm.
I didn't know how to guess prices as a child that, like, for California. Like,
well, that was my thing, too. I'm like, prices according to whom? Like,
right.
you know, even if it's Walgreens versus
right.
Schnucks, like, they're going to have different prices. And so that's that always got me, too. I was like, wait, who is calculating these prices?
And so...
Where are you shopping?
yeah, exactly. But they... So it follows... The documentary follows one main character. His name is... Theodore Slosson, but he goes by Ted sometimes? I don't know.
I thought he went by Theodore on the show, at least.
Yeah, he wrote it on there, but every time they reference him in, like, the subtitles or whatever, the cards between each thing, it always says Ted. Anyway,
uh-huh.
he's the main focus, but they also have Bob Barker interviews, like, current-day Bob Barker. He looks really old.
He looks very old, yes.
And I realize that some of that's just because, like, he's not on TV anymore, so he's, like, you know, letting himself go a little bit, but he also has not, he doesn't have any makeup on, and that was a big thing too.
Uh-huh.
And then there's the producer who was on there for, like, over 25 years. His name was Roger Dobkowitz. Then we see this interview on the Kevin Pollak podcast chat show between Kevin Pollak and Drew Carey.
Mm-hmm.
And then you see a lot of archival footage of both, like, of mostly just episodes of old Price is Right, which had been on for, I think they said it's on its currently, like, 47th season or
yeah.
something insane like that.
I was gonna say, I think Bob Barker did 35 seasons.
Yeah, he did something before
years.
That for a little bit.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember what, and then he took this over. And we get to see, like, so he talks about it. But the Bob Barker and the, like, producer don't really talk about this guy, that the main character,
right.
that much. And so it's...
Yeah, they just sort of focus on the show and how,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, kind of like the Mr. Rogers one,
yeah.
just
giving context.
Yeah, how did it come to be? What sort of happened over time? You know, they talk about Bob. I think he was filling in for someone else.
That's right, yeah.
In the first episode,
yeah.
And he liked it so much, they liked it him so much, that they just decided to keep him, and I'm
just
like,
crazy.
Yeah, that's the best way to get a job ever.
Yeah. So, actual content of the documentary, there were two articles that I read. One was from Esquire, and that sort of took the focus primarily on, like, what the big crisis comes later in the scandal with this contestant named Terry Neese, who is the person who actually makes the perfect bid.
Mm-hmm.
He's the one who, like, for the first time in Price is Right history, guessed the exact dollar amount of his showcase showdown, and then he won both of them.
Mm-hmm.
And what, so I was like, one of the articles was called "How One San Antonio Man's Obsession with the Price is Right Almost Destroyed the Show," and I didn't understand why it almost destroyed the show. And then, like, also when Drew Carey's recounting, like, his emotions at the time, he just, like, uses a lot of profanity, and he's like, "I'm gonna get fired," and I could not understand why any of that worked. And so I kept reading, and it said the Price is Right pays out of pocket for most of the prizes that it gives away.
Oh.
And the prize budget is fixed. So if it's been giving away too many cars, especially, it'll pull out some of the harder pricing games, like Range Game or That's Too Much, to balance the books. Which I don't know. I don't know how they make money, besides advertisers. I thought the things
were
donated.
Point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was the whole, like, you go around and you find people who want to promote their products, and you put their products on the show.
Yeah.
But that's interesting that they pay out of pocket for it.
Which just seems foolish.
Mm-hmm.
So this guy Slauson, you can tell, is he's not a savant, he's just passionate about it. Like,
right.
This is his hobby, and he's a school teacher, so he doesn't do a lot else, I guess. I don't know what that was about, but
well,
he was also a math, he seemed like sort of a math whiz, so he was probably, like, definitely gifted.
Yeah. Well,
numbers.
I could see it starting out as, like, I'm a math teacher. This is an interesting way to think about math.
Mm-hmm.
I can turn these into math questions. I can, you know, sort of engage my students.
And then you saw that he, like, wrote his own Price is Right program.
Uh-huh.
And it, as a sort of way, like, a creative way for him to memorize the prices of stuff. And presumably he, like, just sat at home and did, like, he'd watch the show for research, I guess.
Yeah.
But then he would go once a year to California and, like, sit at a taping, and he went, like, 27 times, 28 times,
something like that. Yeah.
And he got picked one time.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he just failed. He ended up losing because, like, he didn't roll enough or didn't spin enough on that wheel. Which,
well,
you're like, oh no.
It's not that he lost, it's he didn't make it to the showcase showdown.
Right.
At the very end. So there, you know, you have to win, for those who are unfamiliar with the prizes, right? So you have to, you know, to get even on stage, you have to win one time by making the right bid. So you win something then you go on stage and play a game, and he went on stage and played the game and won whatever the prizes
right.
were there.
I think he won I know he won, like, the lounge chair and some dumbbells, because he still has those.
Oh, yeah.
When
he
won, interview him in his house.
And he won $1,000, I remember.
Yes.
And then, then you spin the wheel to see if you can go to the showcase show. So then you possibly get a third time winning. And so he didn't get that third time winning.
Right.
Which seems really unfortunate, because I think, you know, in the show, or in the movie, you're like, oh, I hope he makes it so we can see what he does.
Yeah.
And even he realizes when he doesn't make it there, oh, I'm done.
Well, and it was also like 40 minutes into the documentary, so I'm like, wait, what's going to happen now?
I know, yeah.
And, like, the card, like, that comes up on the screen says that, like, the rules are, if you've been once, you can never be a contestant again. I'm like, what's going to happen with this movie now?
Yeah.
So Drew Carey switches over, they switch the reins, and then he can be a contestant again, because it's like, is it 10 years?
Yeah, they decided 10 years instead of forever.
So he starts going back again, and he recounts, like, the every time he recounts going, he has to, like, the dollar every bid he calls out and every item he remembers, which is just
I thought that was
overwhelming.
Yeah, because what was it? He was going over 20 or 30 years? Like, you know, he was attending over a very long period of time. And for him to remember, okay, the first time I went, I bid on this thing at this dollar amount. And, you know, they're all, like, specific dollar amounts.
Right.
So it's, like, $7.56, $6.59. Because
they show the, like, the footage of the episode, and he's right with everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe it, like, made a really big impact on him each time he went.
Yeah. So it sounds like all of those numbers are, you know, deep within him still.
Yeah. Unfortunately, because of the whole scandal, so... The whole thing is, like, he's done such a good job of memorizing everything. He helps some of the contestants, and, like, some of them don't want to be helped, or some of them can't hear him. And, like, there's story of, like, three different people that do listen to him and win all their stuff. And one is, like, a young kid who wins, like, a car and a computer. One is, like, a young woman who... like, gets this awesome trip and all this other stuff, and, like, he gets to go up on stage. And then the last is, like, this Terry Nice, and he guesses, like, the thing, the prize right down to the dollar, and then, like, they shut the show down temporarily, and, like, try to investigate because they think there's a conspiracy that, like, they're cheating. And Terry Nice does not talk about, like, Ted being a person at all. Like,
oh, yeah.
He's just like, no, my wife and I play this game all the time. Like,
he's like, no, I'm just innately talented.
That's
no,
what
like,
he says.
No one helped me.
He's on record as saying that, so the correct guess is $23,743. And he says that he worked out the $23,000 from his wife, but the last three numbers weren't a guess. He says 743... it's a number we used all the time. I don't know what that means. Because Linda and I were married on the 7th of April, so that's the 7 and the 4. I guess
but
if you're...
But who switches them like that?
Europeans. Like,
they,
not
they
Americans.
Were, yeah, they were not... They
he's
were
from San Antonio,
yeah.
I thought. And then he said... oh, he's from Nevada, sorry. And she was born in March, so that's the 3. Like... Yeah, man, all numbers have meaning, but, like, why didn't you put her birthday first?
Right,
and, like,
yeah.
So, I don't know, there are no rules about, like, people shouting stuff out, and there are no rules about, like, that. They said, the producer mentioned that there were rules about...
You couldn't have a sheet of paper
right,
with all the prices.
Right,
it had to be memorized in your head, but you couldn't, like, bring research documents.
Yeah, you can't have a resource with a reference material.
Yeah, reference material, yeah.
And so, it's just, he said, so, Terry Nice, the guy who won, said, yeah, we use the number 743 in the lottery, and it's our luggage locks, and it's our ATM pins, adding a zero at the end to make it 4 digits. And he said, when people questioned me and I told them where the numbers came from, we had to spend the next 10 days changing all our passwords. So this guy doesn't sound like that smart of a guy. And I'm not saying he shouldn't, like, win, but I kind of just don't know why he would lie about this.
Yeah, well, I wondered if he didn't know the rules about shouting out or something, and, you know, he maybe was afraid that if he admitted someone helped him, then they'd take it all away or something.
Yeah, that could be.
Or, you know, some people are just really into themselves and not, you know, aware... The other thing, so Theodore was saying was, when the showcase showdown came, Theodore was telling the wife, and then the wife was telling the husband.
Right.
And so, the husband may not have known that Theodore helped.
Oh, that's a good point.
So, but, I mean, I would think that the wife would correct him afterwards, but,
yeah.
It, you know, maybe he was too excited to listen or something. I mean,
yeah.
I don't really know. It does seem very weird, but...
It's funny that, like, we don't find out anything else about that. Like, there's a...
Mm-hmm.
We get the audio from a radio interview that Terry Nice is doing, but we see, and we don't, like, I mean, I guess they assume that Drew Carey's not going to say anything more than what he says on the podcast or the show that he's on.
Mm-hmm.
So we're really just getting Theodore's story, who's sort of like the missing piece, I guess.
Right.
So, Okay, so those are two movies, or two documentaries, both sort of about, you know, television you would watch when you were at home, when you were a kid and you were, like, sick.
Yeah.
Like, during, this is, like, midday television.
Well, and about shows that, you know, were on TV for 30 plus years.
Which yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Who guessed? So, okay, so we'll be back in a second with our four criteria to determine which one of these is the better documentary. Okay, and now we're back with our four criteria to determine which one of these documentary films was better. Whenever I do movies, I talk about rewatchability, so which one would you want to sit through again? And then we decided to, when we're talking about documentaries, we want to know which documentary did a better job of making you appreciate the subject matter that was at its focus, or at least draw more of your interest to that. Catherine, which one of our other criteria do you want to talk about?
So the next two that we decided on was the documentary needs to tell either the full story of something you already know about or a new story that, you know, we hadn't considered. And then the last one is just, is it factual and impartial? So we talked about, you know, the criticism that Making a Murderer got was, oh, it wasn't telling the full story, and so it led you to believe something that, you know, maybe wasn't true in real life. So is, you know, are these stories real and impartial?
Where do you want to start? Which category or which criteria do you want to discuss first?
The first one that kind of sparked my interest was the interest appreciating the subject matter.
Okay.
So for me, I thought it was, you know, obviously with Mr. Rogers, I grew up watching him, and I think it was cool to see, like, the behind the scenes and see, like, the parts of it that I guess I was experiencing but didn't, you know, wasn't able to put those feelings into words, or, you know, didn't seem to know that that was happening to me. So I thought that was really cool and made me really connect with that story. And then the
Perfect Bid.
I was watching it and felt connected to the story in a way that I, you know, like, who cares about a random contestant on a show who didn't even really win very much,
right?
You know, but by the end I was like, oh, this is really fascinating.
Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool.
So which one do you think did a better job?
So that's hard to say but I think, you know, just the child in me probably leans towards the Mr. Rogers because it brings up that nostalgia factor.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they did a really good job with the Perfect Bid, too. So.
I'll split you in the middle then. You get, okay. I'm going with Mr. Rogers because I didn't think that this guy's story was that interesting.
Uh-huh.
To the point where they would make a movie about it. Like, And they added so much drama to some of the scenes that it seemed overhyped to me. Now, I am in the minority here because this won the Orlando Film Festival in 2017 for Best Documentary.
Oh,
so
really?
I'm not just making this, like, other people thought this was a good movie.
Yeah.
And I didn't think it was a bad movie. I just didn't think I was more interested in other this guy, the Price is Right scandal, which I had never heard of, and then, like, the fact that I don't want to follow up with, I'm not going to watch any of the show,
mm-hmm.
and I'm probably not going to go back and watch any Mr. Rogers, but I was much more appreciative of what Mr. Rogers did and his impact on others and TV, and I thought that the movie did a good job of showing me how he touched people's lives by having them talk about how he did that.
Yeah. I guess this is kind of like a matter of the delta, right? Like, I think you're already interested in Mr. Rogers,
mm-hmm.
and so maybe it made you a little more interested in Mr. Rogers, mm-hmm. but literally have no idea who this guy is, and this movie I think made you a lot more interested in him. So I think in that way, the filmmakers did a really great job on this, but I think I agree that I feel much more connected to Mr. Rogers.
Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Let's do, which one did a better job of being factually impartial or providing facts and impartial?
We were kind of talking about this before we started recording, but I don't actually know. You know, I don't know what I'm missing on these two. Do you have a sense?
I think that The Price is Right definitely sort of, or the Perfect Bitch sort of puts this guy up on a pedestal,
mm-hmm.
and like everything he says is going to be fact. And they do a pretty good job of fact-checking everything he said with, like showing the episode. He's like, I think this is what happened, and then you showed what happened. And,
mm-hmm.
like, the producer, like, he would say, this is what would happen on the show, and this is, the common routine and all that. And then we would cut to Bob, or we would cut to the producer guy, and they would, you know, confirm what he had to say. But the whole, like... And then it sort of just falls apart with, like, where facts are. Like, that's the... What we wanted to know was what was the reality of this thing, and then it's just, like, the documentary just kind of throws its hands up.
Yeah.
And I think that with Mr. Rogers, they did a pretty good job of being impartial because they showed, like, his kids saying, yeah, it wasn't that great having a dad who was, like, always like this.
Well,
like,
yeah, they said the second coming of Christ.
Right. And, like, they talked about how, you know, Mr. Rogers is kind of weird because,
yeah.
like, he would sit at the dinner table and he would talk in, like, the, you know, Queen Eileen voice when he had to say something negative. And he, you know, he told his coworker who was gay, he's like, you can't come out. Like, the show would be canceled.
Right.
Which is, like... You understand how radical some of the stuff he was doing was, where, like, the whole, like, they showed the scene of, like, I'm assuming it's, like, news footage of, like, that guy who came out and dumped a bunch of, like, bleach on, like, like, the miscegenated watering hole, like, people swimming in a pool together, and the guy, like, freaks out and throws bleach or chlorine on them.
Right.
And then the next day, Mr. Rogers does, like, you know, his, a constant character who's African American, like, is in the same pool with him.
Yeah.
Who's also a police officer.
Uh-huh.
And gets to sing a lot. And so, like, he does all these things, but, like, he, you know, Mr. Rogers had a line in the sand because he was, like, deeply religious and, I'm assuming, like, very traditional in every other respect.
Well, I actually think the character who was gay in real life, the way they made it sound, at least in the show, is that he didn't actually have a problem with him being gay. It was more that they were afraid of losing sponsors.
Right. And so, you, like, for however much of the movie we see, like, Mr. Rogers is awesome. Everything he does is great. You, like, see this part where it's like, no, this is, like, he had to deal with reality, too.
Yeah.
Like, he couldn't do everything for everyone because it was, you know, the 60s, 70s, and 80s.
Yeah.
So, I thought they did a good job of showing that. So, I gave it to Mr. Rogers being more impartial. But factual, anything I saw for either movie seemed like it was, that they would be lying.
Yeah.
Because so much of it is, like, opinion, too.
Right. So, I think I feel the same way that, because the Perfect Bid, you're right, I think the only part that has some ambiguity in terms of factual and impartial is, was it actually Theodore the one who came
mm-hmm.
up with the perfect bid? And, you know, they allude to, or they talk directly about the guy Terry thinking that he did it on his own. And so I guess it's, you know, we'll never really know. So.
Yeah.
But yeah, they definitely showed some of the negative stuff with Mr. Rogers. So
yeah.
They at least tried, I guess we could say that.
Right. So let's go to which one tells the full story. So we know some of it, but here's the rest of it, maybe like the dirty secrets, or which tells a new story sort of like from the sidelines, or maybe someone who's not as important getting, you know, their information out there. What do you want to go with this one?
So are we thinking the full story or the new story? Because I feel like one of them Won't You Be My Neighbor tells the full story, kind of the stuff we didn't realize was going on around the show,
mm-hmm.
like a show, you know, we're
right.
very familiar with. But the Perfect Bid definitely tells a new story.
But it's trying to tell the full story of the Perfect Bid, which we only find out in the last 15 minutes of the movie.
Well, I mean, the whole movie, he is making perfect bids, the whole 20 some odd times he goes to the show. So it's just that one scandalous perfect bid, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. So
I think I'm going to give it to the perfect bid on this one.
Okay. I'm giving it to... I do like how they used non-aired footage.
Uh-huh.
I thought that was cool. But, like, that they weren't able to... And apparently, like, the Privacy is Right was, like, really weird in that their editor didn't want to edit anything.
Oh, yeah.
So every time they shot, they're like, no, this is... We're going, like... We're sending this in, like, it has to be 30 minutes, exactly, with commercial breaks and stuff.
Yeah, no, they said that it was a 60-minute show that they recorded in 60 minutes. Like,
yeah,
they,
oh, that
like,
was it, 60
yeah,
minutes. Yeah,
they really didn't want to edit anything.
I thought, so that sort of added a little bit extra, so we get to see, like, unaired footage of, you know, Theodore doing, helping out, and Terry, like, mouthing the words that he's getting from his wife, who got it from Theodore, so I like that, but I really liked that in the Mr. Rogers documentary, they make mention of the urban legend that he was a Navy SEAL.
Or
he was a sniper for the Marines.
And then he had, his arms were covered in tattoos.
Yeah,
and
they're like, nope, he's just like, people just aren't comfortable with men acting like this and not having like a secret super masculine side. He's like, no, he's just like, he's a pastor, you know, he wore suits, he fed his fish, like, this is just the person he is, like, and I never knew anything about his childhood, and his wife talks about it a little bit, where, like, and it's not, like, exclusive to them, but, like, children in that era, there was no childhood. It's,
mm-hmm.
like, childhood came about, like, eventually when people, like, were able to, you know, kids didn't have to work in factories,
yeah.
So, and then, like, you know, adolescence comes after that with, like, you know, as society moves forward, children get to stay children. But, like, he didn't get to have emotions. He had them, but he wasn't allowed to express them.
Uh-huh.
And then he was super sick all the time. Apparently, he had scarlet fever, which I thought was not... I thought that was, like, with the yellow fever. I thought that was something that happened, like, the 1700s. But
yeah.
No. He, like, was sick all the time, and that's where, like, the role of imagination comes in. And we understand that, like, he was Daniel Tiger... And then by the end, he became the king, Friday, and,
okay.
like, the queen is his wife, and the, like, annoying one is his sister. Like,
yeah.
all this stuff. Like, I got a lot more out of that, where it's, like, you get where, why he's doing some of the things. And like
yeah.
you said, I wouldn't have understood any of the stuff he was talking about, because it's basically an allegory.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure I wasn't aware of the news at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Like, the whole thing of, like, he did... Like, a whole week on death? I don't remember that.
Uh-uh.
Or, like, you know, all that crazy stuff. But we understood, like, he went to, like, child development classes, and he sat on, you know, a board of, like, he would go to these meetings and these conferences to, like, learn things.
Yeah. Yeah, they said that he was, you know, read all of the major child development specialists or human psychology or, you know, human development books and met with those experts and had them, you know, come and talk to him about the show and everything. So it actually was pretty research driven, but also he just sort of had this innate ability to communicate really effectively with children.
Yeah. I thought that was good.
Mm-hmm.
And last one, which one are you going to rewatch again? So this doesn't mean which one's the best, because you can watch, like, Blackfish and think that's really good, but just, like, emotionally you can't do it twice. You know
right.
what I mean? Like, so
yeah.
which one would you, is easier to sit down through again?
So, maybe a little confession.
What?
I've already rewatched Won't You Be
the
My
Perfect
Neighbor.
Bed three times today.
No, I watched, I rewatched the Won't You Be My Neighbor already, so I'm going to have to go squarely with that one.
Well, we're going to have to delete this podcast, aren't we? The rules! There's rules. So the reason I don't think The Perfect Bid is rewatchable is because I don't want to rewatch an episode of The Price is Right.
Uh-oh.
And this guy kind of makes it tedious, because he just recounts, like, bid by bid, item by item, every episode he's been to, and some he's just watched. And it's not, I'm not depressed by that, I'm more bored by that. Like,
yeah.
People are fascinated by all sorts of different things, and I just don't happen to share the same hobby he does, and I'm not bored by that, but I'm not going to subject myself to watching this. Like, I don't want to watch, like, a 3-hour YouTube video on, like, how to make, you know, a plaster cast of something, but I know people are into that sort of stuff.
Uh-huh.
But, so, I don't know if I would cry again if I watched Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood, but I would hope that I'd be more ready for it.
Yeah.
I was, like, recounting, like, I hadn't cried when the police officer guy, the actor, was talking about when he asked Fred Rogers, he's like, when you're saying I love you just the way you are you talking to me? He's like, I've been talking to you like that for 2 years. And, like, the guy says, he's like, no man has ever made me feel that way. He's like, not my father, not my stepfather. And I was recounting this. I hadn't cried in that scene, but I was recounting the story, and I started crying.
Oh,
like,
yeah?
Like, this is so, it's so, and then the whole thing with it at the end, he's like, I want you to think about one person that makes you, like, that made you feel important and, like, helped you out. And it just, like, cuts to each person, and they all start crying. You're
yeah.
like, oh, my God.
So as I was rewatching it, there's this scene where this woman is talking to him. It looks like on the street or, you
mm-hmm.
know, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, for some reason, I forget the reason, but she wasn't allowed to go to preschool. And
yeah.
so instead, she just watched him.
Mm-hmm.
And she was so emotional about, like, without you, I wouldn't have had this preschool experience. And
yeah.
I don't know, something about that just, that kind of made me well up. Like,
yeah.
oh my God, you had such an impact. You know, this is like a 30 or 40-year-old woman.
Yeah, she's an adult.
Yeah.
yeah. Who's fully formed now, and she considers Mr. Rogers to be part of that formation, which
exactly.
is very powerful. And then the whole thing with, like, the young man who, like, his, like, make-a-wish before he had, like, you know, almost this, like, this very scary surgery was to, like, go on the show.
Uh-huh.
And then you see him, like, grown up, and Mr. Rogers, like, jumps on stage and, like, runs and hugs him. You're like, oh my God!
Yeah.
But this is one of the things where it's like, it reminds you that you should have empathy for children, even though they're annoying sometimes. And that, like,
yeah.
everyone
or I think
has value.
I really liked something he said. I think it was after the assassination of Bobby Kennedy.
Oh, my God.
Where,
yeah.
where he, you know, he took all these really tough topics head on for children and, you know, talked about what is assassination on the show and
right.
everything. And I think from that, it helped remind me that I think when these big things come up, a lot of times parents just try and shy away from them, from talking to them and just saying, like, oh, these kids aren't old enough or mature enough to deal with it, so we're not going to tell them anything. And when instead he says, and I agree with it, that if you don't talk to them directly, they come up with stories in their head, which is scarier.
Yeah.
Then help, you know, you taking the initiative to help them make sense of it, you know, in a way that's age appropriate and everything. Like, you don't have to go into gory details,
right.
but just helping them make sense of their emotions and make sense of the world around them that's experiencing really deep, heavy emotions.
And I think that that's, like, also just the idea of you having to form thoughts to communicate what this thing means,
mm-hmm.
both at, like, a personal and, like, a, you know, societal level. Like, if the action of doing that also makes you interact with, like, your emotions, and I think that's also, like, a challenge. Like, adults don't like doing that at all. Like,
right. yeah.
they're like, oh, I'm just gonna, if I don't pay attention to it, or if I just, like, hear someone else's opinion about it, then I don't have to think about it,
mm-hmm.
despite how, you know, real it is in their life or not.
Yeah, you could see that. So, in the show, I think it's Daniel Tiger says that to, I forget the woman's
name. I don't
name.
Know, Miss Irene or something like
yeah.
that.
Yeah.
I can't remember.
You know, what's an assassination?
Yeah.
And I felt like you could see the emotions on her face, like, what, you know, what is an assassination? You know,
right.
I know what it is, but how do I put that into words, particularly some the words that a kid could understand?
Right.
And you could see that grappling with her own feelings,
yeah.
getting ready to say the definition.
So, we've got Won't You Be My Neighbor is our winner today. Would you recommend other people watching The Perfect Bid?
Oh, yeah. I
okay.
mean, it's definitely fun.
It's not long. So
yeah, I felt like
yeah.
it was pretty short. Yeah, it's definitely fun. Like I said, it's, I, or you said even, it's not a story we had heard of or like thought of, and so it is just interesting to see what is this scandal. I mean, it's very tame in terms of, you know, TV scandals, but it was really interesting.
They definitely do a good job of like pumping up the his side of the story, and he actually says that at the end. He's like, "This is the only time anyone's actually wanted to hear from me about this. Like they've already formed their opinions, and I have like a lifetime's worth of my story to tell too."
Yeah.
And you kind of see like the negativity around people's reactions to both Terry and Theodore. So this I don't know if I want to see Terry's documentary though.
I didn't want
a half hour. Or you could read the Esquire article. I'll put that in the show notes. It's not very good. But we'll be back in just a minute with a recommendation of a documentary besides one of these two. And we're back, and we're at the recommendation corner of the episode. So we're going to tell you two more documentaries that you should look up after you watch Mr. Rogers' Neighborhood. Or no, the Won't You Be My Neighbor. Did you see that they're making a movie about Mr. Rogers' life coming out like this year?
Oh.
With Tom Hanks as Mr. Rogers?
Oh, no, I haven't seen that.
I don't understand. Just like give it some more time. I don't know.
Yeah.
Let it breathe. Because this documentary was so good, I don't know why anybody would. I guess Tom Hanks. But maybe this will help public broadcasting stay in the black for a little bit longer.
That makes sense.
Who knows? Do you want to go first?
Sure. So to bring it back to the crime murder mysteries.
They're very entertaining.
Yeah. Actually, this one isn't a murder mystery. It's just a crime mystery, which is, I guess, a relief, considering most of them are murders. But I recently watched Abducted in Plain Sight, which is this really interesting story about this little girl, I think it was in Idaho, who a family friend, they say, abducted in plain sight. So he just befriends their family and then manipulates them into, so he ends up molesting this little girl, but he also kidnaps her and brings her to Mexico and then somehow comes back and gets her parents not to press charges on him.
Oh my God.
And then kidnaps her a second time.
No.
And again gets her parents not to press charges. And so it's just, it's really wild, and he uses aliens, you know, in this mind control. And I think it does a really good job though, because as I'm describing it sounds like crazy, and that's, I don't know how this would ever happen,
right?
And how could this happen to his family? And I think, you know, you take your real moral high ground.
Yes.
By saying like, oh, I would never let this happen. But then when you start listening to the story, it's, you know, inch by inch, he uses manipulation to take a little bit more and a little bit more and get people, under his thumb.
Yeah.
And so it's not that he just showed up one day and abducted this child.
Right.
You know, it was years of manipulation and mind control.
Right.
And you can see how maybe her parents didn't make the best decision, but you could see how a person could make each of these individual decisions to lead to this, like, really crazy, horrific story.
And I think that that kind of goes to two of our criteria we were talking about. Like, it's telling the full story, because you could see, like, that would definitely be something in a headline where it's like,
right,
stupid parents,
yeah,
like, don't prosecute, you know, kidnap alien man, or, you know, but it also, like, lets you, when we say appreciate the subject, I think it means, like, you're giving more attention to things than, like, the 30-second blurb or a headline would,
right,
give. And I think that's one of the things that a good documentary sort of, like, flushes out all of the details to make something from the news fit into a context that makes sense for everyday life, because,
right,
that definitely sounds like something, like, you hear stories about, you know, people that join cults, and you find out that, like, they're not stupid, like,
yeah,
they were just, like, vulnerable,
right,
and that person took advantage of that, and it's, like, Psych 101 stuff when you, like, find out more about it, and, like, the whole thing with Scientology, you hear about, like, those people who either break out or don't break out,
uh-huh,
and it's, like, yeah, because they're being bullied, like, all of their family's in it, financially they will be distraught, like, professionally, they're going to be blackballed. Like,
yeah,
it's they're not staying in because they believe it. They're staying in because the alternative is very bad. Like,
yeah, no, exactly. I think people really underestimate, just it's not one decision in your life. Like, this decision, this, like, crazy decision that people often make, it's about so much more. And so understanding the concept of, you know, like, humans are complex individuals and, you know, their decision making actually is rational, even when it seems really irrational. Like,
right.
Coming as a, you know, a background as an economics student, like, I really love this kind of stuff because economics is all about, like, everyone always acts rationally. They're always making one decision at a time. And it's like, no, like,
right.
There's all this other junk around,
yes,
that helps influence why people do stuff. So I think that's really fascinating.
And that's called Abducted in Plain Sight.
Abducted in Plain Sight.
Is that a movie or is it a docuseries?
It's just a movie,
just
I think.
Movie.
Yeah.
Okay,
so,
cool.
But it's, yeah, it's really crazy how, you know, the first decision, okay, I could see how they would make, and then you just get so much further deeper into,
right,
this that it's like, it was never one decision, do I act crazy or do I not act crazy? You know, it's like,
yeah,
really chipping away at, you know, the control and the manipulation.
Cool. So, the movie I picked is called Ghosts of City Soleil, and it's a documentary that follows these two brothers who are running a gang in one of the slums in Port-au-Prince, Haiti. And it also, so it's they're like teenagers, and it's following them trying to, like, you know, win a territory war, like, take care of their family, deal with other gangs. But there's also a third character, and she is a Red Cross nurse or volunteer, and you sort of see, like, the three different perspectives. So you see, like, the younger brother who's trying to fill the footsteps of the older brother who's trying to, like, lead and also, like, you know, sort of, like, put on airs to show everybody that he should be intimidating and, like, he's not just, like, a 17-year-old, so, you know, who's basically starving all the time. But, and then you see, like, this woman and, like, how she's trying to help the people, but then, like, the documentary sort of takes this weird, like, surreal turn, and, like, there's a love triangle, and, like, both brothers love, or, like, are, like, trying to, like, be with the woman, and she, like, picks one of them, and then it's, like, very dramatic, and then it's very sad, because it's, like, these are, like, gangs in the slums of, like, other the most dangerous or the poorest city. They throw up one of those stats at the time. And it's, like, it both humanizes and sort of, like, dehumanizes the people you're seeing, because you're, like, these are the, like, they're living in a tent like that. Like, and then you also see them, like, the one guy calls himself Tupac because he's trying to, like, create this gangster persona, sort of thing. And but unfortunately, a handful of the reviewers, it actually on Rotten Tomatoes, it's certified fresh, so it's above 70% positive, both reviewers and viewers. I don't remember the other one. But
like, critics.
So it's critics, and then it's, like,
general public?
Yeah, people.
Okay.
But some of the critics are like, that it's not impartial. It's only showing, like, certain things to create a certain story. But the story is incredibly fascinating and plays out like a Shakespearean play. And it's not one of the happy plays. But it's really interesting. And it sort of came out around the same time as the movie City of God, which is sort of, it's a fictionalization. City of God's a fictional movie, where this is a documentary, but it sort of follows the same sort of thing, where it, like, it picks one, like, an actual human that's living in this, like, faraway place that you think is just, like, you hear about it in the news, and, like, the Red Cross is there because they've had a, you know, emergency or all this stuff, but tells you about a couple days in their life and you're just like, holy smokes, that is some heavy stuff.
Yeah.
But it's very entertaining. It's definitely not one that you're like, oh yeah, let's pop it in at the party, but
I was gonna say it sounds like it might be a low on the rewatch.
It is high on all the others.
Yeah.
Except for possibly Impartiality, according to this one guy, but I don't know. He wasn't in Haiti and I haven't been there either, so it's
And who is this one guy even? Maybe he's impartial.
Yeah. He gave it a splat, so I don't know. Okay, so the last part of the podcast is when you plug something. Do you have anything to plug? Are you on social media? Do you want to plug anything? Or your podcast's coming out? Or a book you wrote? Or a zine you're publishing? Anything like that? You can say no.
No. I'm a very average person, I guess. And now you've reminded me of that. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. All my social media is blown up all the time, Catherine. So.
What are you on, Snapchat?
That's it? No one else is on that. Apparently, it's just, even the young people don't want it anymore. So.
Young people don't like Snapchat anymore? I thought that was their haven.
No, I think there's a new one. So,
mm-hmm.
It's probably for the best. I don't want to be on there with them anyway.
Yeah.
They're terrible. So today, we looked at two documentaries and we decided that, Won't You Be My Neighbor is the better documentary compared to, The Perfect Bid, The Contestant Who Knew Too Much, but we gave you two other, documentaries for, you know, if you're feeling up and you just want to get crushed right down, which, like, there's not a lot of happy documentaries, because it's not often where it's like, hey, you know, we figured all this cool stuff out.
I will say, so The Abducted in Plain Sight sounds like it might be crushing, but it's actually more just shocking. Like,
okay.
So I didn't, maybe that makes me sound like a bad person, but it wasn't like I was sitting there like...
Well, I mean, she's not murdered, right?
No, she's not murdered. She's
off to a good start.
I think it's interesting because it's like Abducted in Plain Sight, but you don't really know the story. And then she pops up in the first 5 minutes as a grown-ass woman, and you're like, oh, she's fine. Okay,
yeah.
Good. You know, yeah. So then I think you
just relax. Psychologically damaged.
Yeah,
not
yes.
Physically damaged.
So then you just relax, and then you know, it is mostly like a shock.
It's a whodunit.
Kind of,
That's good recommendation.
Yeah.
All right. So this has been Comparing Apples to Oranges. I'm Mike.
And I'm Catherine.
And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Bye.
I have always wanted to have a neighbor just like you. I've always wanted to live in a neighborhood with you. So let's make the most of this beautiful day. Since we're together, we might as well say, would you be mine? Could you be mine? Won't you be my neighbor? Won't you please? Won't you please? Please, won't you be my neighbor?
Thanks for listening. Can you believe how transportive that song was, by the way? This has been episode 42 of the Comparing Apples to Oranges podcast, and I hope you liked it. Go ahead and check out that blogger site. It's looking ready for people to look at it now, which is great. The URL is thecatopodcast.blogspot.com. It's much easier for you to access links to any of the co-host stuff there. I'm also putting things in the show notes, so go ahead and check out. I got two things in there for you this time. They're kind of fun. Any comments or ideas for future episodes of the podcast, send it to. On Twitter, it's @thecatopodcast, all one word, or email us at catopodcast@gmail.com. The intro, outro, and music bed music was Thumbs Up. And it's by the artist Leisure B. And if you want to check out more of his great stuff, go to humanworkshop.com. Thanks a lot. Catch you next time. Bye.